Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, everybody, welcome on in. It is Friday show. I'm not hearing myself, guys, just so you know. We are going to have Jude LaCava with us coming up at 10:20, and Goody at the Movies, Bill Goody Koontz, will be with us, chief film critic for Gannett. It is Oscars weekend, and of course, when we do Bill, everything all around the Oscars. And Jude, I don't want to talk about how bad last night was in Arizona sports, because it was bad, but I want to go a little bit deeper with Jude. We're back from the combine. Combine will go through the weekend. And it was a great experience to catch up with everybody and to see what was going on back there and all the angles. And, of course, do the TV show from back there. It's great to have so many people checking us out on so many different platforms. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. And I think today there's some leftovers from the combine that I want to get to. Actually, at some point, I'm going to get into the debate last night because, guys, the debate was overwhelming last night with Trump and Rubio and Cruz and Kasich and Carson. I'm going to get into that a little bit. The best movie that I saw this year with the Oscars on Sunday night was Spotlight by far. I don't think Bill is too far off from me on that one. And then there was Steph Curry putting in 51. But let's start with the local stuff, and I'll get over to the combine too, because you know they're at the point now where we've heard from the organization, we heard from the Cardinals back there, we heard from both Bruce Arians and Steve Keim, and I still think their main point of emphasis is pass rush. That's not breaking news. A little concerned about the secondary and some of these guys hitting the market. Finding a quarterback that you look at 2 years or 3 years down the road, that's been my stance, is you've got to look down the road at who the quarterback – next year it's going to be Carson Palmer, and it should be Carson Palmer. And it probably should be the year after that, but it's not a given. And do they have the guy on the roster? And Bruce Arians was pretty straightforward about it. That, no, they don't. They're starting to have that conversation. So that's where I'm at on that one. I'm not saying – and anybody who's suggesting that I'm saying that Carson shouldn't be the quarterback just doesn't get it and doesn't listen. So I'll leave it at that. All right, so last night was probably – one of the worst nights that we've had this year locally. So it's no surprise that the Suns lost. So they're supposed to lose. It was a good night if you're a Suns fan. They lost again. Like, I'm hearing EJ, and I love EJ, but when he's in this spot and it's like 3 minutes to go in the game and there's nobody there and the Suns are going to lose again to Brooklyn, and I'm really surprised that they didn't play better than this. They just don't have very good players. So I was watching some of that. The ASU game, they trailed 30-2. So I'm just one of those guys that really grows tired of sugarcoating in our industry. Oh, boy, what a rough night for the Devils. No, it was that Utah is just that much better and that Herb Sendek had nothing here for Bobby Hurley. Bobby's now hit this point in the time of the season. I thought they'd get better. I thought they'd play harder. And I shouldn't say that they play hard. They played hard. They just don't have very much talent. They're not that good. When you start a game 1 of 16 shooting and you have 10 turnovers, you're going to get drilled. They were losing 44-10 at the half last night. And I didn't get into Sean Miller yesterday. I know Paula did. And I don't usually go back on the news cycle much. But this rant that Sean Miller went on after they lost at Colorado, there's a couple things here. This is not the first time that he has brought this up, A. B, yeah, I know you want to bring up how the only time teams storm the court is when we lose on the road, which makes it sound like we're just that much better than everybody else. Like, well, I don't know. They just storm the court whenever they beat us. That gets tiresome to me. There's not a humbleness here. It's almost borderline. We're just that much better than everybody else. And so what a shock. And C, Colorado's got to learn. You're not bad. When fans storm the court, like I had all these ASU nitwits bent out of shape at me last year when I pointed out, or the last time that ASU beat U of A, that you should expect to win those games. You shouldn't run around and jump around and be that crazy and storm a court. Storming courts means that you're just not that good. and you've never been in this space where you've beaten a good program, if you notice, the teams that storm the courts haven't done much through the years. So there's a little bit of blame on Colorado, too. I think Sean's point was valid, but it just comes across kind of like we are the biggest, the baddest ever, and we just can't figure out why people storm the court on us when we lose, rather than you lost. And you really didn't play that well, and now you're probably going to be an 8th or 9th or 10th seed. I shouldn't go that far. There'll probably be a 7-8 seed. They were a 6 seed last time I checked on most of the bracketology things. It's just a little annoying. And the Coyotes are going to be self-destructing here in the next, I'd say before the trade deadline. Mikhail Bodker is going to be gone. They lost 4 in a row. They've hit the wall. They lost again last night to Florida 3-2. So all in all, it was not a good night for the teams. And look, our winters here in Arizona are beautiful from a weather standpoint. It was just absolutely miserable in Indianapolis. I get it. The facilities there are great. The stadium there is great. It's in the middle part of the country, so it's convenient for everybody. But when it's 28 degrees and it's blowing snow and wind and you're stuck inside versus, I don't know, open the roof of University of Phoenix Stadium and have guys run when it's 70-plus degrees out here. It's not bad. Go hold the combine in L.A. and have them run on the sand in a 40-yard dash. Do something. Do anything. But I'm not going to bag on the combine itself. It's just Indianapolis. You got to be kidding me. So it's great to be back in Do It Today from the home studios. Tonight, we debut our Brad Sismat Baseball AZ show. We have our Brad Sismat Football AZ show, of course, that airs on Fox Sports Arizona. Both shows will be tonight. The baseball show also airs on Fox Sports San Diego, Fox Sports Southwest, Fox Sports Midwest, Fox Sports Ohio, Fox Sports Wisconsin. It's great to have so many regions across the country pick up our content and our show and do what we do. We're appreciative of the people at Fox. I'm going to get a little sentimental here for a minute. One of the, and I'm sure Jude and I are going to go a little sentimental too. We lost somebody in broadcasting yesterday that meant an awful lot to me here in the Valley. Jim Tazarak is a name most of you do not know. Most of you have never heard of the name. Most of you would rather me talk about backup tackles at the combine, but that's just not me. So Jim Tazarak was the general manager at KTAR. Some of you can blame him. He hired me out of San Diego. And he actually kicked me out of his office in the job interview because I mentioned there were a couple of guys that had mentored me some longtime broadcasters, Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and Jerry Gross. Taz said, get out of my office. First, he actually dove under the table, which was great. Then he said, get out of my office. And I thought, you know, I'm 26. I'm out here from San Diego. I'm out here from Los Angeles. We have a big station we're on out there. And I just blew the interview because I mentioned a couple of guys that had mentored me. But he actually was just having a little bit of fun at my expense. And Taz lost his battle yesterday. And the broadcast community here in Arizona is just pouring it out on social media. Jim Tazarak was a legend of legends. It hit me this morning. I'm not sure if he's in the Broadcast Hall of Fame. And if he's not, that's an absolute travesty. And he meant a lot to a lot of people in our world. And definitely going to be missed. Jude LaCava is going to join us on the other side. And we'll go through some of the things on my mind, not just around the Cardinals and the combine. There's a lot going on. You've heard this show the last few months about buildings and the Diamondbacks looking at some options other than downtown Phoenix with their facility. The Suns, are they going to move right across the street? Are they going to move up to the reservation where the Coyotes are looking to go in Arizona State? And Jude's one of those rare people. He's a great resource and a great friend that I want to pick his brain on what we're going to see in the way of the arms race of new buildings being put up and facilities, because it means a lot to you and where your teams are going to play. That's next. I'm Brad Sismat.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
One other note before we get to Jude LaCava, and that is tonight, and actually this weekend, Arizona State women, Charlie Turner Thorne, there is a bright spot in the midst of all the misery that we're suffering through our winter sports. They're ranked 9th in the nation. They're trying to get their Pac-12 title, and they're taking on USC. Jeff Munner, good buddy, calling the games over there this weekend. So good luck to Charlie Turner Thorne. As mentioned, Jude LaCava, now sports director at Fox 10, longtime friend. And Jim Tazarak passed away. So I'm going to get to the sports stuff in a minute. But as I mentioned, the broadcast world Without Jim Tazarak, a lot of people would not be in the positions they are today. What are your thoughts on the passing of the guy known as Taz?
Brad, I'm one of them. He gave me a break of a lifetime, and I'm forever indebted. I always use the analogy, he was the George Steinbrenner of radio. He was the last great GM of the golden era of radio, and the numbers and the way he ran the ship, it was tough. He was a tough love kind of guy, but he also was a very loving guy at times, but he molded so many people in our industry for so many years that it's a real loss. He wasn't easy to work for. He was demanding. He was tough, but he was also extremely supportive. And, you know, I'm forever indebted. You know, he took a chance on a young guy at that time from Toledo, Ohio, who was just grinding away and struggling. And every chance I had to see him over the last few years, I thanked him for that.
What's interesting is, and people may not know the backstory, when Jude left KTAR and you went over on the TV side, you and I had already become friends, colleagues when I was in San Diego. And so there was this vacuum for like 6 months where they had all these people come in and try to replace Jude. And I just was one of many. And when they offered me the job, I flew back over and I mentioned that I thought highly of you. And I had mentioned a couple people that had mentored me, Lee Hamilton and Jerry Gross, and he actually kicked me out of his office. Well, first he dove under the desk. And then he said, get out of the office. You're not getting the job. And he actually sat there and looked at me deadpan for about 5 seconds. And then he smiled and said, you know, we want to have you here. So, yeah, he meant a lot to me, too, in that regard and was a tough love guy. So he will be missed.
Yeah,
from there.
I can't say enough, Brad, in terms of what he was able to do to establish KTAR as the powerhouse. I mean, real powerhouse. It was considered one of the most impactful radio stations in the country in terms of news and sports. He was an innovator. He was always looking to develop young talent, and he supported older talent, and he understood and respected the industry. And I know he fought a hard battle, hard battle the last few years, but you know, our thoughts are with Sharon and the whole family.
Good stuff there. Okay. Transitioning lightly over on the combine. So I just got back from Indy a couple days back there. I'm not surprised about the comments of trying to find the replacement down the road for Carson Palmer. I'm not sitting here suggesting that they have to have that replacement today, but it's pretty clear from Bruce's comments and from Steve's comments that they're looking around at their options. That should not be their first priority, though, in my opinion. Where are you at with their offseason? What you want to see? Everybody's saying pass rush first priority in the draft, free agency. What's your view?
I think that they're very interested in a quarterback. If the right quarterback is there, and I'm going to say in the second round, I think their priority is the edge rusher. But I do think that there's a sleeper quarterback that could be a franchise guy. And I've had a chance to really delve into his background, and that's Christian Hackenberg from Penn State, who was fabulous as a true freshman. He prepped at Fort Union. He's an Eastern Pennsylvania kid. He crashed and burned under Franklin with a horrible, horrible offensive line. But I'm going to say this. I think he's a poor man's Andrew Luck. I think he could be that good. He's big. He throws a great long ball, which you know Arians loves. He thrived under Bill O'Brien and then really just took a beating this year with a porous offensive line. So I think he's really, really curious to them. But having said that, I think their first business at hand is to follow the model of what happened in the Super Bowl, and that is pressure on the quarterback. And I can see them definitely focusing in on the best available edge rusher in that first round.
The feel back there, and I agree with you on quarterbacks, and that they may take one high. This is the kid at North Carolina State. There's Hackenberg. There's Connor Cook. There's all sorts of players that aren't first-round caliber guys. We see this every year, Jude, but it seems to me that if we're just looking at the current roster, Andre Ellington's not going to be back here, in my humble opinion. And if he is, it's a real surprise just because the durability's become a question. I'm really concerned about their back end of their secondary and the contractual situations there. What about you?
Yeah, I don't see Jared Powers coming back if he stays at wanting $7, $8 million a year. I don't see that. I think Justin Bethel needs more reps and more time. I mean, he really struggled in those last few games of the season. I think they'll work out a deal for Tyrann Mathieu. They have a real decision to make on Rashad Johnson, who's also a free agent and is really kind of the brains of that operation. So it's possible, you know, it's back to the three most important position in today's NFL: quarterback, cornerback, and edge rusher. So I could see that. And then, you know, I do believe that that's an option. And, you know, of course, they could also go free agency. There's been some talk about bringing Cromartie back, but my understanding is that hip is in bad shape, and I just don't see that happening. So they're in transition there. But they will sign Mathieu. They'll extend his contract. I believe that's going to get done. And they're going to have to look at that other corner position so somebody can compete with Bethel opposite Patrick Peterson.
Okay, from there, we're talking with Jude LaCava at Fox 10. Let's have a serious discussion here, not that we never do, but about the arms race that's about to happen in the way of facilities. And I'll give you my view is the Diamondbacks are going to leave downtown by 2020 and will be over where the drive-in used to be in Scottsdale or across from the Cubs at the 101-202, that the Suns are going to move to the corner where Civic Plaza was, that the Coyotes are going to crawl in bed with Arizona State, and that both the U of A and ASU as universities are wanting to purchase the current land that sits where U.S. Airways Center or the stick, whatever you want to call it, is. And that the wild card in all this is what the tribes are going to do in the way of getting involved in these sports franchises. That's my view in the next 4 years. What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Well, let's start with the tribes, because I've got some really, really good sources on the inside at the tribes. And I do believe that they do not want to be part of any type of partnership with Robert Sarver and the Arizona Coyotes at this time. Now, they would look at, I know that there is a developing company that has been representing both Anthony LeBlanc and Robert Sarver talking to the tribe. But the tribe, other than sponsorship and naming rights, I don't see them going above and beyond, let's say, what they did with Salt River Fields and the D-backs. So the question is, and I think you got a pretty good handle on it, I think that area on that Civic Plaza next to the other side of the light rail is definitely, I understand the bonds have even been cleared, is an option. The problem there, again, though, is Robert Sarver's image in this town and closing the deal and the right kind of deal, so I am concerned about that. The Coyotes could possibly get involved with something involving ASU hockey on a co-op program. I mean, is it possible that Wells Fargo could be looked upon as an option that could be revamped in handling Division I basketball, hockey, and even the NHL? I don't know. I've heard that possibility. But I think you got a pretty good handle on it. I just think the question will be financing. I think that, you know, Derek Hall floated that out there with the D-backs, and I think the days of public financing are limited when it comes to multi-million dollar projects for sports teams. There has to be more creative ways. There has to be more of a mutual partnership between municipalities and teams. And I think that bar is a lot higher and a lot tougher to get to than it was 15, 20 years ago.
In the downtown pressure, Jude, because, look, the talking stick people have a model that actually has the arena with the Suns sitting on it and that they floated out there. And if you're Mayor Stanton or you're just the powers that be and you look at downtown, and the Diamondbacks did an economic impact and a study on the reshaping of Chase Field, and it came back at $300 million to take the roof off. Well, then it allows them to say, well, look, it costs this much money for us to move. And it goes back to your point, how will it be funded? But I think for fans saying, well, what are you talking about? The Diamondbacks would leave downtown. They believe the stadium is too big. My response to that is, if you'd won over the last 10, 15 years, you probably would have a much greater season ticket base. But the product has failed. That said, the building is coming up on 20 years old. Downtown cannot afford to lose both the baseball team and the basketball team. They just can't. And with Cityscape sitting there, I think the pressure really is downtown, and that there is some leverage from these sports teams, whether we like it or not, right?
There is a lot of leverage. And I know Mayor Stanton has said one of his goals. I mean, they've looked at everything, including over by Encanto, where the old Coliseum is, and refurbish of the Coliseum to be the bridge to the new facility over the next few years if they do decide to leave Glendale in the near future. But I think that if you have to look at the big picture, I would say the Suns and Coyotes, somewhere in the vicinity of downtown, in a new co-op type arena, a la Staples Center. And then I think you have to kind of put the Diamondbacks in a different category of saying, is there a way to look at a chunk of money to, let's say, remodel the interior and make it a more intimate setting for Chase Field? I just think, you know, when you're talking dollars now and construction costs, you're right, getting into the $800-900 million, Brad. And you know, that's a lot for a municipality to take on, you know, and we haven't even had education right for these kids in Maricopa County and all the other issues that go with it. It's a much taller order than it was when Jerry Colangelo was looking to build then Bank One Ballpark.
Well, and add to that, I hear the Diamondbacks are frustrated, borderline very concerned about their Monday through Thursday night attendance, and that if they move out to the 101-202, that really is the center now of Maricopa County, is that bit of land out there.
And this is what there was extensive research done about 2 years ago. 60% of your corporate headquarters are located along that 101 in Scottsdale, North Scottsdale. What does that mean? That means luxury suites and boxes for a sports team. I've always felt that if you could flip-flop where Glendale has the Coyotes and you could put that facility somewhere near Talking Stick off the 101, closer to your season ticket base, you would flourish. I think the Coyotes owners have even explored that a little bit, because 60% of your corporate headquarters and the vast majority of your season ticket holders, quite frankly, whether we like it or not, those that can afford it and go to the games with much easier access will go, and attendance will flourish. So these are issues that are really on the cusp of big decisions, and I do think that Bettman will continue to ride with this group as soon as they can commit more dollars to the franchise and finally come up with a plan for a new arena.
Next coach of the Suns is going to be who?
Brad says Matt. No. Oh, goodness, Brad.
I would take a space, and you could take a space quite easily in the front office of the Phoenix Suns. I'm serious about that. I'm not saying player personnel, but within the community, Jude, you could be, you could have a title of assistant to the president very easily, because Robert needs some help in that area.
Here's the thing that you do. If you're smart enough to know what you don't know, you hire the best people and you get out of the way. Yeah. And we both have said that about Robert Sarver for years. But it doesn't matter who the coach is if the systemic issues continue on how they missigned, how they misdraft, how they incompetently run that front office. Look, we've gone through some pretty good coaches. Alvin Gentry is coaching right now in New Orleans. Jeff Hornacek, in my mind, may have had some issues this year, but finished second in Coach of the Year honors 2 years ago. This is really a sad collapse of a franchise that had a fabulous brand for decades. And it's a shame it's at this point, but to me, the coaches will come and go until you find a leader, a basketball operations guy that can oversee and direct this franchise. It doesn't matter who's coaching.
Yeah, it's kind of like Golden State back in the day, where they were just this franchise that would just get kicked to the curb every year, or Washington, or the Atlanta Hawks. They were just kind of there. Phoenix has become it's just kind of there. They're going to stink every year. They're going to be in the lottery every year. And it's not fun. The only way I can have fun with this is to say they won again last night by losing. And I don't like being a smart aleck in that way, but it's true. Losing to Brooklyn was the best thing that could have happened to them last night. They just need to keep losing. Stay the course. Lose every game. If you go on a 2 or 3 game win streak, it's the worst thing possible, because you're never going to catch Philadelphia. You're not going to catch the Lakers. And I know that sounds harsh.
I don't even know if they can lose appropriately. And let me say this. I still go back to the decision-making process, okay? You put your wager on a guy like the Morris Brothers, You put your wager on a guy like Lance Blanks. You used an interim coach in Lindsey Hunter, now it's Earl Watson. You know, the overall scope of how the organization is run is the bigger issue. Who's to say that they wouldn't misstep on a Ben Simmons? I don't know. Maybe they would trade. It's just so unpredictable. I mean, they drafted Kendall Marshall in the first round. So there's no real confidence, Brad, even with let's say they get the lottery pick, the top pick, I don't know what they would do with it. Logic would tell me, you and I could sit there and say, go get Simmons. But I don't have that kind of confidence. I don't have that kind of confidence. When Goran Dragic says, I don't have trust in this organization anymore, and he's shipped off, and a guy is shipped off on Isaiah Thomas, who becomes an all-star, and then you dump Markieff, and you say, okay, we put money into these guys, and that didn't work. And, oh, by the way, we tried to sign Tyson Chandler to get LaMarcus Aldridge, and that didn't work. So, I mean, give me something I can hang my hat on.
Yeah, well, it's good that I have not seen the words Lon Babbie float around here in about a month. I don't know what he's still doing there. It's been a disaster. I thought Jeff Morad was the worst agent turned front office guy in Arizona, but Lon has lapped him. And Ryan is Ryan may be Josh Burns or A.J. Hinch, where Phoenix is a place where he got his teeth kicked in and they go somewhere else and they have success. But I agree with you. The front office, I don't have faith in, and I can't trust them. When you give Tyson Chandler $39 million more and they're sitting on this number, that's an immovable contract at this point, unless you're saying, please take some of our good stuff and we'll give you some of this bad stuff.
You've committed $70 million to Eric Bledsoe, $70 million to Brandon Knight, and you have to continue to play Devin Booker at the two if you want him to develop the next few years. So you still have a decision there in moving one of those contracts. They backed themselves into a deeper hole, believe it or not, than they were in even last year. And it's sad because you're asking NBA fans to kind of hang with you what's left of them without any real confidence in how the organization is run, and that falls directly on you know who.
Okay, and I'll let you go off this with this bit of good news, but you know, Jude, that if you and I went to Robert Sarver 10 years ago, 15 years ago, what would it be now? It'd be 12 years ago when he bought the franchise, and we said, hey, Robert, here is $5,000 or $10,000 or $100,000 of our money, and he buys the team for $400 million, and now it's valued at $1.1 billion, and he hasn't made the playoffs in 6 years. And he's run the thing into the ground, but he's almost tripled his investment. We'd both be thrilled. Like, the owners of the Suns have to be thrilled beyond belief with their money. They have to be embarrassed beyond belief with the results on the court. But give me another venture where you can triple your dollars and stink. It's amazing to me.
Well, you know, look, there's no denying the valuations of where the league has gone with Ballmer and the Clippers at $2 billion for that team has been kicked up the value dramatically for everybody. But you still have to go around town. You still have to, you know, stop at the grocery store and pick up a quart of milk, Robert Sarver, and people are saying, that's the guy. That's the guy that's kind of responsible for this. And, you know, the question is, and you kind of hit on it there, are the other minority owners saying, yeah, it's not just about money. We're trying to win, and we have floundered for now the last 6 years. So we need to have a better guy that's at the top here. My curiosity is, when will the other minorities be outraged enough to say, Robert, you've had enough time. We can't go for this anymore. You know, that to me is you know, and really, let's get, you know, I think if a lot of people, if you put this poll out there on your show and said, how many people would want Robert Sarver to sell the team, I think you'd have an overwhelming response affirmative.
Sure. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time as always. Stay well.
You got it, Brett. Thanks.
It's Jude LaCava there, Fox 10 sports director. You know, the thing with him is we could sit here and go through every franchise and pick it apart and the depth that he has. And it's just really good, really good, really good. Speaking of depth, Goody at the Movies in about 10 minutes. On the other side, I'll be back with some more comments, things that I saw, people I talked to at the Combine. That's next, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports tonight on Fox Sports Arizona TV. We debut Brad Sismap Baseball AZ. I will tell you there's some Diamondbacks, but this is a show that has been picked up across the country on Fox Sports Regional, so it's much more than just a baseball show. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's a cool little concept. And then our football show, Brad Sismap Football AZ, that's on Fox tonight as well at 6 o'clock. Bill Goodikun's here in a few minutes. The Combine, so yesterday the bit of news out of the Combine was was John Elway saying that Peyton Manning deserves another 7 to 10 days. Laquon Treadwell, I was there yesterday when this went down, The Ole Miss wide receiver that's not going to run his 40 in the pro day is probably the best wide receiver that's out there. Not the Cardinals need help, but wide receiver. His pro day is March 28th. Eric, is it next week? ASU's pro day is next week, right? It's like
It is a week from today.
Week from today. And then ASU, they open their spring workouts next week as well, I believe, or it's the week after. U of A spring workouts are going on. Do you, you've been out at these workouts before. For fans that aren't aware, we will actually get to see them run in person rather than at the combine. Combine, we don't get to see anything.
And when you mean, workouts, you mean their pro day, correct? You're not talking about spring
pro day. Yeah, they're,
gotcha.
They're pro day.
Yes.
They start over in the weight room. They actually start over in the weight room when they do these pro days. And like Westerman yesterday ran out of gas, cramped up on his bench. I think he can do that again at the ASU weight room. They'll get him in there if he decides to go that route, which he probably should.
It's also an interesting opportunity at these college pro days for former players to come back and sort of re-show off their skill set to these NFL scouts and player personnel people. Derek Hagan, I think it was last year or the year before, Derek Hagan was basically going through his own, I don't know, pro day as an ASU alum at ASU's pro day, if that makes sense.
No, but there's more. Like, they had a satellite workout last week with Berkovici.
Yes.
There were some other ASU players.
Out of the Cardinals facility.
So the NFL, it's not all about, I know people get all wound up with who is at Indianapolis, but I go back to Richard Sherman being a fifth-round pick. We had Greg Cosell on yesterday, and when we finished the interview, we sat there and talked for, I don't know, another 15, 20 minutes just about stuff and certain players, and he is so good. He is so, so good, and you see the NFL front office guys come over and, hey, Greg, how's it going? Hey, Greg this, hey, Greg that. He is really good at this stuff, and he went back to Richard Sherman and Patrick Peterson. We're talking about Patrick Peterson as well, and that was the draft with Patrick Peterson that had the Jake Locker and the Blaine Gabbert. J.J. Watt was a later pick in that. Cam Newton was in that draft. It was a draft that was filled with a lot of very good players, but then some players that just turned out to be absolute busts at the position. And it gets me thinking with the Cardinals that you sit there at the end of the first round, which is great. That's where you want to be. I don't want to sit here and analyze who are you going to get as a top 10, top 15, top 20, top 25 pick. That means you did not have a great season. I'm fine with that. I'm also fine with the front office and how deep they are in the background in the interview process on this. Teams go about their interviews differently, I've learned, in talking back there with some organizations and what they're looking for versus what the Cardinals are looking for. I think it's very healthy that Bruce Arians is one of those guys that is so old school and does not stay by the script. He was open about it. He said, I don't sit by the script of the questions we're supposed to ask because I want to see these guys off balance. I want to see them actually explain to me if the situation is X, especially if I'm talking with a quarterback prospect and there's X amount of time on the clock and I want to accomplish X, what plays would they use in that situation? That to me is really interesting stuff versus how fast can he run, how high can he jump and all that stuff. The immeasurables, how quickly does he make a decision? Does he have quick eyes or slow eyes? Quick eyes, slow eyes. Those are the types of things that they talk about at the combine. One other thing before we get to Bill. You know what? Actually, I'm going to save this for Bill because I'm sure Bill watched last night's debate too. So we're going to get the Oscars with Bill. Goody at the movies. It's Friday. You know what's going on in sports. Do you know where the movies are this weekend? And it's Oscar weekend. Bill Goody-Kunz, chief film critic for Gannett and AZ Central. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now it's time to talk about not just movies. He actually sent one note out, and he was being very serious about journalism. Do you remember this from earlier this week? I know you were on social media quite a bit, and you were asking a very deliberate question. And I think let's get into – let me just go – I'll start first on this. So your point was people don't trust what we do longer, correct?
Well, I know that they don't trust what we do any longer because I teach – classes sometimes at ASU and sometimes at Mesa Community College, and I've just asked them the question just really randomly. I said, does anybody trust the media? And 100% saying no, absolutely not. And I was like, what? Really? And I got to thinking about it, and then I started seeing people like my Facebook friends and relatives even talking about the presidential election and saying, well, Trump is going to win because we're tired of the media controlling people and all that stuff. I just got to thinking about it, and I was like, what do we do wrong? And I asked a buddy who is the deputy editorial editor of the Los Angeles Times, what are we doing wrong? And he said, well, it's not, you know, you get a different answer from media people than from non-media people.
Right, right.
And his answer was, like, it's not necessarily that we're doing wrong, we're just not necessarily giving them what they want to hear. If the perception is if the coverage of your person is negative, then it's biased. But then what I've heard a lot from, and this is one of those things where you just kind of post it, and like the second you send it out, it's like, oh. This is like, if I die tomorrow, this is what I'm going to be known for, and I don't want to be known for. But people say that, like, you know, they treat it like a horse race too much. They just, all they do is talk about the outrageous things they say about each other. They don't provide any of the real information. And I think that the point from some of the more serious people is that information is available. That information is available, and it's not very hard to find.
Let me jump in here on this then. So last night I'm trying to watch Trump and Rubio and Cruz. I felt bad for Ben Carson. He's just kind of there off to the side. Kasich, I think, makes some good points, but they barely go to him. And I'm watching the three of them, and it's like a bad SNL sketch in rehearsals on Thursday night, because Trump just stands there like live from New York. This is Saturday Night Live. And some of the stuff that CNN was trying to do last night and some of the questions they were trying to ask just came across to me as, we got to get as many clicks as we can because we have Donald Trump on our screen and everybody else be damned. And it's nothing personal with Trump. I'm looking at it from a media standpoint. I can see why people are pissed and tired of us just in the way that this thing is covered.
I think the Republican debates in particular have really been – the moderators have not been that great. They let them do whatever they want up there, for one thing. They don't have any control over it. But the other thing is, what you're saying, they'll ask contentious questions for no other reason than make them say bad things about each other. And, you know, I mean, people do get tired of that. But I also think that, you know, it has been a really unusual campaign season so far, and it doesn't look like it's going to, you know, change. But I do think that the media, in some ways, I think, I don't know that they control things, but they just help decide things. I think there are three things in particular that the media creates what is sometimes a false momentum, but it becomes true. One is the presidential race, one is Oscars, and one is the NBA most valuable player.
Mm.
And I think that those are the three things where you wait. With the NBA, it's early yet, of course. But soon they're going to start talking about, well, it can't be Steph Curry again. I mean, it was somebody, and everybody will decide the same thing. When is the last time anybody was surprised by an NBA MVP vote? Ever? I mean, they just decide. And the media, it becomes, well, this guy's voting for him, I might as well vote for him, you know? And it just, I think that those, you know, you come out of, these Republican candidates come out of a state and they're like, well, he finished a strong third. He's got all the momentum. And then all of a sudden, everybody votes for the guy. So he does have all the momentum. I think that's the kind of thing that bugs me a little bit. But
all right. Well,
Sure,
but let me go from there over to the Oscars. And we've talked quite a bit. We're both looking forward to seeing how Chris Rock performs on Sunday night. I think... To me, there's two movies that I've seen this year. One movie, I should say, that I've seen. The other that I'm going to see tomorrow, which is Revenant. You did not care much for Revenant. You really like Spotlight. I really like Spotlight. But do we both love Spotlight just because it's talking directly to you and I in what we do? Or do you see that as an overreaching movie compared to the others?
I think that it's a little bit of that. I think, of course, media people are going to like a movie where the media is sort of heroic, but I think that in this case, this really is a great movie, and I think it's an important movie, and it tells a real story that's an important story, and those are things that tend to be good as far as the Oscars go, but I think that, again, talking about momentum, I think Revenant just has too much.
Okay, and so let me bounce over to Revenant. Why do you dislike Revenant?
I don't know. You see what the media does. I don't dislike Revenant.
You don't like it as much as Spotlight.
I wasn't even in my top 10. I was not in my top 10. Okay. I think that it's
a beautiful
movie.
That's because you
just like it. I mean, there's a lot of movies I like that didn't make my top 10. But it's beautiful. The cinematography is fantastic. It can win that. They can retire that award for this movie after that. But I just thought, basically what it is it's a guy gets his throat kind of ripped out and he crawls across the country when it's snowing real hard. And I mean, that doesn't mean there's not some artfully done things about it and that it's not well done. It is. But that's all it really is a kind of survival story that is not, you know, it's just one man against the elements trying to win his Oscar.
You know, it's also DiCaprio. It's eye candy for people, I suppose. Not for me, but.
He ain't that good looking with his throat ripped out. I'll have to say that. That tends to take away some of your attractiveness.
All right, we got about 2 minutes here. Eddie the Eagle comes out. Eddie the Eagle, any good this weekend to see?
It's okay. It's one of those totally. It's kind of like that movie about which, by the way, in the same Olympics, the Jamaican bobsled sled team. It's, you know, the underdog. There's not a surprise. This is. I think I said what I said in my story is this movie is where surprises go to die. I mean, there's nothing unexpected about this movie. The only weird thing about it is they invented stuff. Like Hugh Jackman plays his disgraced American coach who redeems himself by helping him. There was no such person. No American coach helped him. There was no American that helped Eddie the Eagle. Eddie the Eagle is just kind of this, you know, kind of unusual guy who went out there and did this insanely dangerous thing after not really having done a whole lot of it. But it's okay. But very much one of those things you could wait for to just, you know, flip through. And if you see it on the channel, you could watch it.
Okay. A documentary, Last Man on the Moon.
Loved it. It's about this astronaut named Gene Cernan, who is indeed the last man to walk on the moon. And in some regard, it's kind of like that thing where like Dan Marino went to his first Super Bowl and everybody's like, well, he lost, but that's okay. He'll be back. That's kind of how it was back then. And it's like, now, granted, they were going to shut down this program, but the movie is so good about how it just, it sounds like a cliche, but this is when we were really reaching for the stars. You know, I mean, the country, even the world was kind of coming together. And these were just, these are unbelievably amazing feats of science and math and all these things. To land a man on the moon and have him walk around and we can see live pictures of it. I mean, it's still stunning. And I was just surprised at how emotional it was. Like, he parks the lunar rover so they can aim the camera so that it can take a picture, so it can take a movie of when the lunar module blasts off for the last time from the moon. And I surprised myself. I like caught my throat when it happened. It was so cool. And it's also that kind of reminder of how we just cannot do stuff like that anymore. We don't have it. We talk about the division of politics and everything else. Not going to happen, and that's too bad.
I have a friend who's a pilot who is convinced to this day that we never really landed on the moon and that it was all shot in a movie studio.
I can't
for the life of me understand why he would have this theory and thought, but he does. So,
well, let me commend to your friend a documentary called Room 212. It's about The Shining and all the crazy theories about The Shining. And one of the theories about it is that it is Stanley Kubrick's apology to the world for the hoax of the moon landing. That Kubrick is actually the director who shot all that stuff, which is some kind of cockamamie theory. But that's a great movie, too. So.
I'll give it to him as a Christmas present. I appreciate your time. Enjoy Oscar night. We hope for a fast show, Bill, for you. We'll be thinking of you.
It's not going to happen, but thank you.
It's Bill Goodykunz, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central. Of course, Bill's on deadline on Sunday night. We don't want him to be up against it. Sports360AZ.com, that is our website. We have plenty of content up on Sports360AZ.com. High school, college, pro. I know on the high school front, very busy last couple of days for the staff. They've been out at the high school playoffs in basketball for boys and girls. It's terrific to see. On the college front, pro front, with the combine, I've got more content that I'm going to put up on the site as well. You can follow me on Twitter, @RadSusMatt. Our Twitter handle for the site, @Sports360AZ. Our TV shows tonight, two of them tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Susmat Football AZ from the Combine, and then Brad Susmat Baseball AZ around spring training. So on Fox Sports Arizona tonight at 6 and 6:30. And the baseball show, it's actually been picked up by 6 different Fox Sports Net regionals too, so people can check it out around the country. Thanks for being with us.